to say that. He's this funny naturally, I guess. So, good morning. My name is Sean Hammer, and we are now from Minnesota. Although Minnesota, is that right? So great way north. We just came down. We were, yes, sir. We just left Minnesota Thursday night, so we got here Saturday, and it's so nice here. It's nice and warm. It's like a 50 degree temperature swing we're dealing with, so it's pretty good. So my name is Sean Hammer. We used to attend here regularly and serve at a camp up the road here, Wilderness Ridge. My wife, Krista, and looks like everyone's here. Wyatt, Isaac, Leah, Clara, and Elsa May. So we're all here. So come say hi to us. So we've been serving at Prairie River Camp. It's a camp up in south central Minnesota. Basically, think Iowa. It's 5 minutes north of there. So it's really kind of far south on Minnesota. And it's a co-ed camp. So it's different than what we were doing at Wilderness Ridge, but only slightly. Basically, I've been the maintenance director up there. So I've got a nickname this last summer, Mr. Wizard. I guess I fix stuff. So that's been a lot of fun, getting to know those folks and serving up there. It's interesting that you mention folks in Africa, because the demographic in Minnesota is kind of interesting. You think Minnesota, a lot of Norwegians, which is true, but there's also a lot of folks from Africa there. There's a lot of Muslims. There's an awful lot of people from Mexico, like deep south Mexico, like hot Mexico. Like, how did you end up in Minnesota? It's not warm there. So it's an interesting kind of demographic. We have Hmong as well, and so a bunch of folks from Asia, and it's sort of a weird international mix of people. And you've got traditional Norwegian farmers trying to get a handle on the fact that their state is now being invaded by all these international people. So it's an interesting place. So there are some differences, you may be aware, between Minnesota and Texas. Number one, the accent, Minnesota. You got to say, yeah, okay? There you go. Everyone say, yeah. Yeah. Okay, that's really easy. It's very common. It comes up in every conversation at least 50 times. So that's when it'll pay out dividends. The other big difference I've noticed, other than the temperature, is mosquitoes. And we have some mosquitoes around here. Right? Have you noticed mosquitoes in the summer? Well, in Minnesota, there's two kinds of mosquitoes there. There's the small ones, and then there's the big ones. The small ones, they go right through the screen door and get you. And the big ones, they open the screen door and then come in. And I'm not joking. These things are gigantic. They're 3 inches long. They're massive. But they only come out right during summer camp, so that works out really well for us. So Prairie River Camp, it's a little different, and I've been the maintenance director there. When we went up there and kind of looked around, it was wintertime, so we weren't really shocked by the temperature swing. But it was an interesting opportunity for us as a family. The other family that works there, there's exactly two employees full-time. Me and the other gentleman, Jonathan Wahlberg, and he's got four boys. So we're in good company with kid count. So they basically hired me on to be the maintenance guy and just fix stuff. But that really didn't work that way. I don't know if it works that way in businesses or at other camps, but it definitely doesn't work there in the camps I've been at. So I did maintenance for about 2 days. And then the rest of the time, we've been doing general contracting, architecture, engineering work, plumbing. I learned concrete last winter, concrete and winter. I wouldn't recommend it. It's cold and it's heavy. But anyway, so a little bit of everything. So it's been a lot of fun. I've been having a good amount of time up there. Let me read you the mission statement for the camp. I have not memorized it because I'm a terrible person. So Prairie River Camp is mission to reach young people everywhere, working together with the local church and other like-minded partners to raise up lifelong followers of Jesus who lead by their godliness and lifestyle, devotion to prayer and the Word of God, passion for sharing the love of Christ, and commitment to social involvement. So what does that look like? Why does that matter? So we went up there, like I said, to be the maintenance director, right? And you work at a camp, and you figure, okay, well, there's people, and you get to share the gospel with them and stuff. And that all happens there at camp. But being in construction, and I'm sure Bubba knows and other guys in construction, you get all kinds of folks. You get a few Christians, but there's predominantly not a lot of Christians in construction. And so we get all these contractors and people coming out as I'm kind of managing these projects and whatever. And they don't really know how to handle us. We had a group of guys coming out, and it was cold. It was I think it was 15 degrees, and they're laying cable before the ground gets really cold. It's 15, so they're rushing to get this cable buried before it freezes, before the ground freezes too deep. And so they're out there, and we just take them hot coffee and stuff. And the one guy looks at me and goes, "Is this a Christian camp?" I said, "Well, yes, sir, it is." And he goes, "I figured you guys are really nice." And so this kind of attitude, they're not really sure what to expect from us. So hospitality is a big deal with construction folks. I mean, you show them a little bit of hospitality, and all of a sudden they're really interested in what you have to say. So sharing the gospel on a regular basis becomes a big deal. I've got a great family. God has blessed us with wonderful kids. And one of the perks of being at camp is that my kids get to come to work with me pretty regular. And so you've got these people coming out that may or may not know Jesus, and then they meet my kids, and they know what to expect from me. I'm a camp guy, right? I'm obviously outspoken on my faith, so they know what to expect from me. But then they hear the same kind of stuff coming from my kids, and they watch how they interact with us, and they watch their work ethic, and it speaks volumes to Jesus. And so we've just been so blessed just through the example of my family and just the experience that we've been able to kind of share together up there. So that's what we've been up to. So that last bit on the mission statement is that social involvement piece. It's something I kind of dreamed about for a little while. God sort of made happen when we got up there. So we do camp stuff. I do 5 to 7 days a week, depending. I keep things moving so that Jonathan can schedule more retreat groups and work on advertising and all that other stuff. But the other thing that I've been able to be part of is, you know, we get there and it's like, well, we need a church. Well, churches there are different than here. It's Minnesota, so like every second church is Lutheran. And so we go to a Lutheran church, but it's kind of a weird Lutheran church. The denominations are sort of falling on hard times, so they have to reinvent themselves a bit. But in the process of going around and meeting people at different churches, they discovered that I was interested in jail ministry. So I've been invited to be part of this jail ministry for about a year and a half. And so I talked with my boss, you know, hey, am I able to do that? Is that something I'm allowed to do? Because I'll have to, like, leave during the day to go do this. So they've basically given me permission to be part of the jail ministry and then also to join and volunteer on the Bryceland Fire Department. Now, the moment that I started working or they knew that we were coming to camp, this is before we even moved there, and they're just talking with the other people I work with, they heard that there was somebody under 50 moving into town, and they said, well, is he interested in volunteering for the fire department? We really need extra guys. So they've been working on me, and after a year, I finally went to a meeting, which was a mistake, because I left with a pager. So that's been great, and camp has been allowing us to do that, because I have to leave during all hours of the day and night to be part of the EMT service and to go to jail Bible study. It's definitely during the work hours. And it's been interesting. You know, I could have gotten involved in those ministries here, but for some reason God didn't open those doors. I don't understand why, but he sort of has his timing. But being part of that's really kind of opened my eyes to just ministry in general and just people. You know, this is a youth camp, and it's all about really ministering to youth. But that's only summer, right? Summer 7 to 17, you know, for 4 weeks, and then what? So we get all kinds of groups that come in the rest of the year, and it's interesting because I go to the jail, and it's my first time in jail, leading the study on my own. I'm there, okay? Have you ever been into a jail? I mean, okay, I don't mean to put anyone on the stop here. Have you been to jail where you were not being incarcerated? It's a terrifying experience. I mean, you know that you're not going there to be locked up, but, like, the doors are, like, this thick. And when they slam shut and you're locked into a room, it's like, okay, I hope nothing bad happens. Like, if everyone, like, dies or the electricity goes off and they forget I'm here, there's no escape. We're locked in. So you get back to the Bible study. You're in this room. And then all of a sudden, who knows shows up. You don't know. They don't tell you if it's going to be all men or if it's going to be all women or if it's going to be mixed, if they're going to be county jail or they're going to be prison. And so people walk in. And it's interesting because some of the pastors that, I'm not doing this all alone. There's other pastors that come and we trade off. But the other pastors, they sit right by the button. Like, right by the door, there's an intercom button, so if anything weird happens, they can hit the button. But, like, honestly, If something bad happens, you hit the button, it's too late, right? But it's been really interesting because a lot of people that go to prison are people that I mean, not exactly, but it's the kind of people that we see at camp are the same kinds of people that go to jail. An interesting story for you. It's been maybe a couple years ago. So it's middle of camp. It's a rained night. So we're inside and we're sitting on the floor watching a movie. Well, everyone else watched a movie. I'm sitting on the floor and I'm with this young man who's been acting up. So I'm sitting here with Tim. Everyone else is enjoying the Lego movie, which I can't watch anymore. But I've seen it only 20 times. It kind of burned me out a little. So I'm sitting on the floor with Tim, and Tim has just gotten in trouble for beating up on his brother again. So I'm talking to him, like, hey, what's going on, Tim? Like, why do you keep hurting your brother? Like, why do you keep, you know, getting in his face and stuff? He says, well, it's not my fault. He started it. Well, okay. Okay, but why are you reacting then? And he goes, well, I'm trouble. That's just what they call me at home. And so I look at him, I go, well, like, Tim, you don't have to be trouble anymore, right? That's the joy of camp, right? You can be who you want to be, right? No one that knows you is here, so you can choose to be the better man. You can be the person you've always wanted to be. Well, he just thinks I'm nuts. And so after talking with him for a little while, it's not going anywhere well. He's not listening and stuff. So I'm at my wit's end, and so like the loser I am, I finally say, well, God, I need your help here. The wrong moment, right? So I pray at the very last possible second, and I just happen to pray out loud, like, God, please be with this kid. Let him know that we do care about him, that we love him, and that we do really want his best. And so I finish my prayer, and I look up, and Tim is looking at me like I'm insane. Well, we barely make it through the night. The next morning, I walk into the cafeteria, grab a plate of food, sit down across the table from a foster dad and one of his sons. So I just start venting. It's like, guys, what did I do wrong? I mean, your foster dad, you've got like 8 boys in your house. What am I messing up here? He goes, well, you know, I actually know Tim's family, and he has a lot of problems at home. His foster situation is not very good. And then his son pipes up. This is Josh White, if anybody knows Josh. And he goes, yeah, he goes, it's really hard for that family. And he goes, not only that, he goes, you know, in the foster system, they actually rate us based on our behavior. So if we're really bad, you know, misbehaving and stuff, then our foster parents will get paid more. He goes, it's really demeaning how they put us in these categories like this. And this is the foster system. And it really just kind of hit on me that, I mean, so we have our sins, right? And we do our stuff, but it's our kids that really pay the price. We suffer too, right? But it's the kids that is our legacy. They're the ones that live with what our mistakes are. And these kids are just, they're just kids. I mean, he didn't pick to be a foster kid. He didn't choose to be in that family. I mean, it is what it is. So I was talking with another camp buddy of mine. They're become foster parents. And there's a few good foster parents in the system. Actually, there's a lot of good ones, but there's a few that are not great. So my friend is telling me, he's a camp guy, he goes, man, Hammer, like, what's the deal? He goes, foster care, we love these kids. And I was listening to their caseworker had come in a few days earlier, and he goes, well, I was listening in just to see, you know, what is this boy that we're being a foster parents for? What is he going to say about us? I want to know. So he kind of listens up to the door, and he listens. And the kid's going, man, this family's amazing. Like, every night they give us a hot meal, and they give us a bath, and then they even read us a story. And Matt's like, what kind of horrible family won't give their kid food and a bath and a story? And it just breaks my heart. I don't know if it breaks your heart, but this is the system of foster care. And it's not just in Texas. It's across the United States. So I did some digging after talking with Matt, and I found out that about 80% of those people that I meet in jail and prison, 80% of them were in the foster system. Now, that doesn't mean if you're in foster care, you're going to prison. But it does mean that if you're in prison, you're probably in foster care. Okay? Our kids are paying the price. So Prairie River Camp, it's a co-ed camp. The primary demographic is foster kids. Probably about 95% of the kids that we see are part of the Youth for Christ program. Youth for Christ is not big in the South, although if you go up to Dallas, there's one. I think there's one over in Houston. Not a lot, but there's a few. So the way that Youth for Christ generally works is they have kind of a drop-in center. So you've got these kids, they have broken homes. What do they do at the end of the day? Well, they come to this center where they know that there's going to be responsible adults, there's going to be food, and there's going to be some Bible study and some fellowship. And so they can come here every single day after school, and they have somewhere that they know that so they can care about people, right? I've got a list. If you're interested, I've got a sign-up list at the end right here. Put your name down. One of the things that we talk about at camp is these 40 indicators of a strong family or kind of the social things that we rely upon. And you look at this list and they go, if a kid is at high risk, which is what most of the kids that we deal with are, there's 40 of these things and things just that you count on. Like they look forward to going to school. They read books occasionally. They have some adult outside their parents that tell them that they have value, that they get a regular meal, that they have more than a pair of clothes. I mean, this kind of regular stuff, right? If they have less than like 10 of those, they're considered high risk, okay? So these kids that we see, they don't know if they're going to eat today. They don't know where they're going to live tomorrow. I mean, they're living with a family now, but the family may get tired of them, and they get booted, and they're with someone totally different tomorrow. So they're in fight or flight mode all the time, every day, all day. Imagine being just like wound up. Imagine the stress that would just build upon you day after day, week after week, never really knowing, can I trust this guy? Well, you know, you can't trust him. They're going to turn their back on you, just like everybody else. So then they get involved in the Youth for Christ program. Now, it's not the golden bullet. It's not saving anybody. But what it does is it gives them a chance to hear Jesus in a way that's safe, right? They come there every single day. And it's crazy. Youth for Christ has really strict rules. Like if you wear clothes that are just, you know, if you're like really revealing or if you use cuss words or if you beat up on somebody, like you're out a week. Boom. You can't come for a week. Like, and that's a huge punishment for these kids. And so they follow the rules. And they're all about having boundaries and guidelines. And you think, well, how does that work? How does guidelines and boundaries make kids want to be around you? It does. They need structure. And so they love it. They come to these things and they hear Christ. Well, what they end up doing is the adults that they get to know at these drop-in centers all across the United States, these adults want them to go and have a camp experience. How many of you went to camp as a kid or as an adult? Okay, a few of you. So the interesting thing about camp, how many of you have heard of Billy Graham? Billy Graham, okay? If you take all of Billy Graham's crusades, every one of them, and everyone that's ever made a profession of faith, out of every single one of his crusades, out of all of history, and you pile it into one room, and then you take everyone who's ever come to Christ at any camp at all, and you put them in another room, that far outweighs anything that Billy Graham has ever done. More people have come to Christ through a camp than any kind of evangelical outreach like Billy Graham's crusades. Not that Billy Graham didn't do anything good. He did great stuff. Camp is a very powerful thing. So these people know that camp's a powerful thing, so they want their foster kids to go be part of this, these Youth for Christ drop-in center kids. So they go door to door with the form, right? So they take their form, they go door to door, and they hunt down the parents, and they fill out the form, and they have the parents sign the bottom, and then they have the kids do some volunteer work to earn a scholarship money, and they go to camp. So it's like, okay, I'm your counselor all year long. You know me, and I've got maybe 10 kids. And so what I do is I go door to door, and I get all of you guys to sign up or get your parents to sign up to come to camp, and then I take you to camp, and I'm your counselor for a week. And that's what most of our camps look like. It's a counselor or two that they're very, very familiar with, and so it's very clicky. So it was interesting the first year my kids went to camp, because they love camp, right? So my boys went. They were old enough to go, so they went to camp, and they were stuck inside this little micro community. Boy, it was really awkward. Imagine these kids that are desperate for adults, okay? And then you stick a normal kid, just a regular average kid, in the midst of him. Man, he's an intruder. You don't want him around because he's going to take the attention away from your adult that you want for yourself, and you don't know anything about him. So it was kind of awkward for him. So 90% or so of our kids that come to camp are in this situation, and they come out, and they want nothing to do with any of the other cabins. So it's co-ed, but they could care less about the other gender. Some stuff, but mostly not really. And so what we're working on right now is then starting these other cabin groups that are primarily just average kids, just regular people. And the other interesting thing is if you take a bunch of people with the same problem, you stick them in a room, no one gets better, right? What you do is you take a person with that problem and you put them in a group of people with other problems, and everyone's problems seem to become less important, right? They're able to help each other because where my gaps are, your gaps are different places, and we fill in each other's gaps, right? So that's kind of what we've been doing. let's see here. Reg has asked me to talk just briefly about some of the needs we have. So I've been working on this dining hall. We probably about 8 of the 15 buildings at camp have been moved from somewhere else onto the property, maybe more than that. We like moving buildings, apparently. So we have a church, an old church building from the 1800s, late 1800s, that's moved out there. We have, six cabins. Those were all moved out. They were built off-site and dragged in place. We have a lodge that was brought from some other camp in Iowa, jacked up, put in place. Well, last September 2015, we moved a building that this is its third move. It's moved more than some people. So it was built west of town. It was a schoolhouse. It was used as a schoolhouse from late 1800s up to like 1950. Then the big school consolidation happened. They moved the school into town on the site of the high school. They used it for high school for 8 years. And then they moved it up the street, bulldozed the high school, rebuilt a new high school. So then it sat there for a while, 1958, and then we moved it last September 15th. So why do we keep moving buildings? We got a lot of people that come out. An interesting side note, so I've been doing this jail Bible study. The first day I come in there, and I kind of give them a quick, this is what I do, and they go, oh, you need to talk to Tom Hennis because he's part of the STS and we want to get out of here. Okay, and I'm like, what is this, a jailbreak? No, so they've got this community service program in Minnesota. So I call the guy, and we finally work it out, and we get all these kind of these people from jail and prison come out and volunteer at camp. But I go to jail and lead a Bible study, and I can't do anything. I can't give them coffee. I can't even give them stickers. I mean, there's nothing. I got nothing to help them out with, no hospitality at all. I can love them. I can share the gospel, and that's it. But then they come to camp. Oh, man, I can butter them up all day long. I give them coffee and cookies. We buy them lunch. It's great. And Tom is really good, their leader, so he lets me get away with all kinds of stuff. So we get to minister to these people in a way that they're not used to seeing from other people. So anyway, so side note there. So we're doing this dining hall. We've had people come out, and they go to jail wearing whatever, but they come out, and that's all they've got. So they come to us, and they're wearing like a light jacket, and it's like 20 degrees outside. It's not good. But these folks, they're hard workers. They've done a lot of great stuff, a lot of volunteers. So that's one of the things we've seen a lot of gain in is lots more volunteers. People like to be appreciated, and just little things make a big difference. Why do we move buildings? These people ask this all the time. Wouldn't it be cheaper to build a new building? Absolutely. It'd be easier for sure. It might be cheaper. But the thing is, it's a great spiritual lesson. I mean, if you look at our lives, look at my life, maybe look at your lives, right? God takes broken, ugly, disaster, right? And he breathes new life into it. And that's exactly what he does in these buildings too. So we start with this messed up, run down old building no one's using anymore, and we breathe new life into it. And it's a great picture of redemption and sanctification and transformation, right? That God brings this to our life. And so you tell this to these prisoners and that they're out there at camp. And all of a sudden, they're just crushed. They're overcome, right? It's because it's hope. What have we been doing in Minnesota? We've been bringing hope. I mean, stuff that we just take for granted here in Texas, people don't know about in Minnesota. I mean, men's groups. They can't do men's groups because there's farmers, right? Farmers have harvest season. So they're in a tractor. They go, well, I can't go to the group, so I just won't go. Well, that's ridiculous, right? Men's groups are great no matter what you have going on. And if it's important, you'll make time, won't we? So bringing hope to people, starting men's groups, just getting involved in the community. The Bryson Fire Department, they like to drink beer and smoke cigarettes. So I'm weird because I don't do either. And so being able to minister to these folks in a way that's, I'm not trying to be offensive, just loving on them consistently and regularly. About a week ago, getting close to the end of my day, sitting at my desk doing some paperwork, you know, the really exciting stuff. And my pager goes off. Attention, Bryson Ambulance, you're needed in town, gives me an address. So I run to my car, I don't know where the heck it is, I'm still a new guy, so I'm typing it on the phone, okay, it's right in town. So I drive really swiftly to town. We're allowed to speed when we're answering a call, which is a pretty sweet perk. So if any of you who are interested in the fire volunteer department, that's something you might think about. So I get to town, I'm not the first. There's two other people that beat me, an ambulance driver and then some other person like me. So we walk in, and this guy has severe heartburn, is what he's calling it, severe heartburn. And while he's there, he's just bumping and jumping, and oh, it hurts, oh. So we put the AED on him. Anybody ever put the AED on anybody? It doesn't matter if there's pictures on the sticker. It is terrifying. So I'm peeling this thing off going, the left, the right, I don't know. So you just stick it on there and we're good, right? The AED says no shock advised. Oh, okay, I didn't screw it up. Everything seems to be working right. So we get him in the stretcher. We get him in the ambulance. Nothing, right? We're going to take him to the hospital. No big deal. He still seems okay. We got two EMTs in the truck, which is a lot more than normal. You only have one. And we have two drivers up front, and I'm in the back because I have to fill out paperwork. More paperwork. So I'm in the back. I got my little clipboard, name, address, whatever. And then all of a sudden, just as we got out the highway, the one EMT goes, pull over, call for backup, have him come meet us. And this guy, he's having a massive heart attack. It was scary. And if you've ever seen anybody have a heart attack, it's an interesting experience. And this man died. Not permanently, but he died. And we did CPR, which is also a brand new experience for me. I mean, the dummy is one thing, but a person is a totally different deal. So there's all these people in the ambulance that we didn't expect to have. Usually there's three of us, and instead there's five plus a wife. And it took all six of us to make this happen. The one driver up front kept the wife from freaking out because her husband's dead, right? And it took four of us just to do CPR. And after 20 minutes and, I don't know, five or seven shocks, like, he starts talking again. It was crazy. So the paramedic shows up, you know, he takes charge. It was gross. I mean, this man had eaten something earlier, and we were looking at it, and it was everywhere. And so the first thing he does is he shoots him with something. He goes, we're going to put a plug on that problem and put some sort of anti-nausea, something or another, and it was scary. It was scary, the man, but he lived. In fact, he's complaining this week because he has to give up cigarettes and pop. They say pop up there. But we get to the hospital, and everyone's just, like, they're freaked out. Like, we saved this guy's life. Like, high fives. Like, yeah. And I go, guys, this was a miracle. God did something here. And they're like, yeah, it was a miracle. Like, what? But we see this stuff, don't we? I mean, every day we see this stuff that's a miracle, and we just... Anyway, so it's a great experience. And so God is sort of, for some reason, he stuck our family in the midst of this place. And there's lots of really good, really nice people in Minnesota. But there's not a lot of evangelical, on fire prophets of God. And so he's had us up there, just being our weird selves, sharing the Lord with people. And it's interesting. You know, we did these little spiritual surveys. Have you done these spiritual surveys? What your gifts are? Have you ever spoken another language? No. Can you ever interpret another language you've never understood? No. I mean, whatever, right? So it's kind of obvious what they're asking. But you get to the end, and I discover that I have the gift of prophecy. I don't know the future. Can't tell you lottery numbers. Sorry. But I do speak truth. And it's one thing that you really, really need to hear is truth, right? Paul says, all the best gifts. Tongues isn't in the, it's not on the top. It's actually like two or three. But prophecy is right up there. Right, people need to hear truth. So we go to jail. We go to camp. Now, camp is not like jail, but it's a little similar. Okay? It's a little similar. They don't lock you up at camp. But jail, it knocks your legs out from under you. All of a sudden, things are different. Right? When am I going to eat? Where am I going to sleep? Who am I going to be with? Right? All your life is a little messed up. It's a little disrupted. And so all of a sudden, you start thinking about these important issues. Like, who am I? Do I really want to be here anymore? No. Do I want to be who I am out there so that I keep coming back in here? Do I want to make big changes in my life? So they're really open to hearing truth. And so then you stick me into the jail, and that's all I'm bringing is truth. Like, y'all need a community. You need to get into a church. You need to have Jesus Christ, right? Sharing the gospel, preaching the Lord to these people, and they're not getting pissed off. We have hardened criminals weeping. It's the craziest thing you've ever seen. And it's not hard. Like, I don't have the gift of really good, clear communication or anything. I just go there and just share with them, right? Whatever God's been sharing with me. And God, he's transforming people's lives. And it's just been a great privilege. Well, camp's the same way. You get people at camp, right? They go to retreat or summer camp or whatever, and they're looking to hear truth, right? They want to hear something that's authentic, right? Kind of kick their legs out from under them. Have you ever been to camp? Like, where am I going to eat? Why do they give you the schedule? Because you want to know when you're going to eat. When is the speaker going to stop talking so we're going to have fun, right? Or whatever. Whatever your thing is at camp. So camp's a similar thing. You get to camp. Things are a little messed up. You're interested and more willing to hear truth. And so someone with my personality and spiritual gifting fits really well into a camp setting because I speak truth and people are really open to hearing it. And so God's been doing some really neat stuff with our staff and with our campers. And as the maintenance guy, right, I get to be everywhere at camp. So people are in need of something. That's why they call me over, right? And then I get to share with them a little bit more than what they were expecting, right? So I get to be everywhere, and I get to love on kids, and it's been a great joy and a great privilege. So that's really all I've got. We've been doing this dining hall thing. We don't have anywhere to feed people, which works okay at Texas. But imagine trying to. Okay, we have someplace. Have you been to a carnival? You know that little wagon where they serve elephant ears out of? Yeah, that's our kitchen. Okay, serve 200 people now with no counter space. Whew, it's bad. So we're upgrading from that, which works okay in summer, to not at all in the winter, to a dining hall, which will be pretty humongous. So that's what we're working on. Our executive director is going crazy trying to figure out the funding for it. And the other thing that we're doing is we've got, as we're adding more regular kids in our summer camp program, we need more interns. So if you know any young people that are interested in college age or older, that would be awesome. Actually, most of our counselors are people like in their 30s because they're part of this Youth for Christ program. So it's somebody that would be an intern or interested in coming out for a week and being a summer camp person. And yes, so summer camp. So we've got 4 weeks of summer camp. We've got a dual week where it's a boys paintball camp. We have a professional paintball guy come out and coaches them in paintball for a week, maneuvers and all sorts of good stuff. It's wonderful to see these guys show up at the beginning of the week and be like boneheads like me, and at the end of the week they're like, right? And they're having all kinds of fun, right? So that's a lot of fun. Well, at the same time as the boys are learning how to be commandos, the girls are doing girls' horse camp for a week, and that's wonderful. We have this great lady come out of Iowa, which is like 10 minutes away, and we had, I think, 21 horses all donated this last summer. People let us borrow the horses for a week, so it's great. And we got to be get to know this guy in town. He's the local John Deere sales guy. He comes out because we have all John Deere stuff at the camp. Well, he also is involved in horse teams, so he comes out and he has a team of horses and a buggy. So we convinced him, didn't take much, to come out to girls' horse camp last year. They thought that was the coolest thing in the world, to drive a team of horses. So we need counselors for both of those. Actually, girls' horse camp is already waitlisted. It opened for an hour, and that was it. So I think we're up to 12 spots. If we can have more, but we need more counselors. And then boys' paintball camp. The other 3 weeks of summer is grade school kids, so 7 to 11. And the next week, and that's co-ed, the next week is middle school, so if you're junior high. And then the last week is high school. And this year we're doing it on camp. Usually we go off-site. Last year they went to Yellowstone National Forest. So they take a bunch of city kids, they take our nasty old food trailer, and they drive them up into the woods. They go backpacking. So that's a lot of fun. And then we actually have 2 weekends of winter camp coming up. So if you want to go sledding, come on up. You can stay with us. We'll put you up in some nice facilities. You can stay with us or whatever. And it's a weekend of skating and broom ball and sledding, and it's cold, but it's fun. I was actually going to bring a cooler of snow, but I ran out of time, so I'm sorry. No snowball fights. But if you come up, we can do snowball fights with everybody. But that's all I've got. Sign up. So if you want to know more, if you want to get our newsletter or get pictures or whatever, if you have some questions, I'm going to put this in the back. So if you're interested, just go ahead and put your name and email and phone on here. Again, my name is Sean Hammer. Thank you. Appreciate it.